Good afternoon, everyone. With me at the table, to my right, is the woman who needs no introduction, the Commissioner of the Department of Health, Judy Persichelli. To her right, another familiar face, the Department of Health's Communicable Disease Service Medical Director, Dr. Ed Lifshitz. Great to have you both. To my left, a guy who needs no introduction, the State Police Superintendent, Colonel Pat Callahan. We have Chief Counsel Paramel Garg and a cast of thousands. Let's start on a really sad note, and that is to remember this guy, Keith Pinto, the 19-year-old lifeguard who lost his life on Monday when he was struck by lightning on the 21st Avenue Beach in South Seaside Park, which is part of Berkeley Township's White Sands Beach, where he was working, and that's a beach, and that's an area that we know very, very well. Keith was a 2020 graduate of Toms River High School North. Our prayers are with his family, his mom and dad. I reached out and left a message for her today. I've not yet had the honor of speaking. His brother, his twin brother, I believe, his sister, as well as with his friends and fellow lifeguards. And we also pray for the continued recovery of the 7 other individuals injured by Monday's lightning strike, including 3 other lifeguards. And Keith was the 2nd young lifeguard in as many weeks to lose his life on duty. I'm signing an executive order today which lowers the flags in Keith's honor this Friday. And he worked to keep our state safe and our shore safe, and we will not forget that. I don't have a picture, but I also just spoke a short while ago with Charlotte Trout, who is the widow of Pat Middlesex County Hazmat Lieutenant Donald Trout, who died on a call last Friday. He was a member of IAFF Local 345. He leaves behind his wife, Charlotte, and you can imagine how she's holding up. Please keep her and their kids in your prayers, their daughter, Gabriella, who's 11, and their son, Gianni, who's only 4. So God bless Lieutenant Donald Trout and his family. Next up, we're going to switch gears. We will have more on this, and Pat will have the bulk of it, but the remains of Hurricane Ida will impact our state really today through the early morning hours of tomorrow. Pat, if my math is right, many areas should expect between 2 to 4 inches of rainfall, potentially up to 6 in parts of Central and North Jersey, and I think you're particularly worried, and our team is worried. By the way, Pat has a minor in meteorology because the Office of Emergency Management reports to Pat, which is why that's one of his areas of expertise. But I think Northeast New Jersey is where your particular concern is. Many communities are still waterlogged from last week's storm, so Ida is going to be dropping water on already saturated ground, heightening the threat of flash flooding. I've just been shooting out notes and have exchanged notes already with Helmeta Mayor Chris Slavicek, Mike Ferranti, the Cranberry Mayor. I've sent a note out to the Jamesburg and Monroe mayors as well. And you know, again, this is a situation where you've already got soggy water. The winds, I think you think, may gust in some places up to 30 or 35. Please God they don't get too high, because when you combine a lot of rain, soggy ground, trees are then going to be looser. There could be significant tree and power line damage. I hope not. If you're out and about and you come across high waters, do not go into them. Turn around. Don't drown. And as always, ready.nj.gov, I think, is the best place to go for the latest information. On the other end of this system, and I guess this is a silver lining, the weekend looks like it will allow us to begin drying out. So it looks like the weather for Labor Day weekend is decent. So please just stay in if you can over the next, really importantly, over the next 12 to 15 hours, and let this storm pass. Now, again, shifting gears. On Monday, we discussed some of our ongoing plans for fully vaccinated residents to receive their booster shots once the CDC provides their guidance as to when they should be received. And in some of these discussions, you may hear us speak of boosters, and you may also hear us speak about third doses. And we had a little bit of that discussion on Monday. And to ensure there's no confusion, as these terms are not interchangeable, I just want to give a quick differentiation. And Judy or Ed, if I get this wrong, please don't hesitate to correct the record. A booster shot is just that. It is an additional dose for individuals who are not immunocompromised that will allow the immune system to boost up its defenses against the coronavirus. We are learning from the research that while still robust, the level of protection offered by the initial two-shot regimen of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines or the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine slowly wanes. This booster gets us back to that 90-plus percent level of full protection. Many of us may think back to when we were kids and received other vaccine booster shots to ensure that our bodies were well prepared to fight off potential infection. No difference here. A COVID vaccine booster ensures that the immune system remains in a strong and aggressive defensive position against the coronavirus should it find its way in. Now, a third dose or a third shot is not a booster. It is a necessary additional dose of vaccine for individuals living with an immune system deficiency for whom the initial two-dose regimen may not simply provide enough of an immune system response to provide the level of protection that the rest of us are provided. So when we say third dose or third shot, we are speaking directly to individuals with immune system deficiencies who need this to achieve a benchmark level of protection because it is harder for their immune system to reach that level of protection after the primary series without that third dose. New Jerseyans with immune system deficiencies had been eligible to receive that third dose since August 14th, and as of this morning, a total of 41,872 third doses have been administered to those needing them. Again, this is separate and apart from all the work that Judy and Ed and team and Pat are putting into getting us ready to administer those booster shots for the rest of us when we're eligible, and that'll begin the week of September 20th. So again, if you're immunocompromised and are in need of your third shot, your time to get in line is now. On the other hand, if you're preparing to receive a booster shot, we're awaiting the final recommendations from the CDC. We'll have more information regarding that when you can get your next dose as soon as we can. And again, we discussed this, Judy, on Monday, and Ed, this is another big question we're awaiting guidance on. Do you get it 8 months after you've completed your vaccine regimen or 6 months after? And the amount of folks who would be eligible on day one, you can imagine, is a much larger crowd. And therefore, it has real infrastructure and planning implications for us if it's 6 months and not 8 months. So with that, let's move on. Schools are reopening, and our students and faculty are returning for in-person instruction. Certainly, masking by all individuals within our school buildings is important to safely kicking off our school year, but masking is part of a package, of a layered approach to safety that is being put in place, including staying home when sick, just like the old days, vaccinations, physical distancing, hand washing, among other steps. Another strategy schools can employ is routine testing to detect the virus even among asymptomatic students and staff to prevent further spread in the school community. To better support districts that are adding testing to their toolkit, the Department of Health under Judy's leadership and Department of Education under Dr. Angelica Allen McMillan's leadership, we'll release details on the $267 million we have set aside to support schools to implement K through 12 screening and testing programs. Districts will have a choice between using state-contracted vendors to provide end-to-end testing services on-site at schools, or districts can request funding to support an in-house testing program, which may already be in place, so long as it is consistent with the Department of Health's guidelines. This program can also be used to support testing of unvaccinated staff pursuant to our executive order. Given that we don't yet know the extent to which these programs may be utilized, we don't know at this point how far this $267 million will ultimately go as we provide these tests at no cost to district students or staff. And our program will supplement the federal Operation Expanded Testing Program, which also provides testing through federally contracted vendors at no cost to schools. We strongly encourage districts to work with their local health department to develop a testing strategy and consider participating in this program. We further hope all parents and guardians ensure their child participates in testing when the opportunity arises. But we are ready for the start of the school year. We want everyone to be as safe as possible in their schools and classrooms. We expect everyone to be wearing their face masks, and we will continue to work with district and educational leaders. With that, let's move on to all of today's numbers. First, here are the vaccination totals for today. In addition to these numbers, we can report that we are now over the threshold of 80% of all eligible individuals who live, work, or study in our state having received a first dose. An additional 673,000 folks above and beyond the total you see on the screen here have gotten their first doses of either Pfizer or Moderna vaccines. That's another huge milestone on our path forward, and we need to make sure that they remember to go and get that second dose. Here are today's case numbers along with the positivity rate and rate of transmission. Positivity rate jumped. It's a weekend date, Judy and Ed, and that's back to the usual pattern we had for so long. And the rate of transmission, good news is it's bad news, it's above one, but the good news, it's continuing to float down. Here are the numbers from our hospitals. And here, as you can see, take a minute and look at those. And here are the numbers of confirmed and probable losses of life. As you can see, we're confirming 20 new losses of life today. And as we always do, let's honor the lives of three more of those folks who we have lost. We'll start today in Haddonfield, which was the home of this guy, Edward Eddie Corbett, who passed away on March 10th at the young age of 58. He contracted COVID twice, and it was the second fight against the virus which so grievously impacted his health. He was a Camden native and a graduate of Camden Catholic High, who went on to earn a degree in theater arts from St. Leo's University in Florida. From there, he embarked on a career in the theater, which took him to the Louisville Repertoire Theater, Summer Theater in upstate New York, and various stage, television, and movie roles in New York and Los Angeles. He moved back to South Jersey in 2001 and volunteered his time at his alma mater, helping the Camden Catholic Arts Department and preparing students for regional Shakespeare competitions. In fact, Camden Catholic is naming its theater room in Ed's honor. Ed was predeceased by his parents, Patrick and Dorothy, and by his oldest brother, James. He left behind his sisters, Tish, with whom I had the great honor of speaking on Monday, and Mary, brother Tom, and their families, including his eight nieces and nephews and four great nieces and great nephews. We know Ed has found another stage on which to lead. May God bless and watch over his memory and his family. Next up, we remember this guy, Jose Luis Nogales Salazar. He lived in Rahway. We lost him on February 19th due to pulmonary fibrosis caused by his bout with COVID. Jose was part of our state's proud Bolivian community, an immigrant who came here from his native city of La Paz to complete his studies in computer engineering. And with that degree, he had a 20-year career with the Xerox Corporation before moving into the medical field as a member of the Hackensack Meridian Health family in Edison. Jose was a devout Catholic, and in staying true to the tenets of his faith, was always ready to provide a helping hand to anyone who needed his assistance, no questions asked. He is survived by his wife, Madeline, with whom I had the great honor of speaking on Monday, and to whom he was married for 24 years, along with his son, Andres, who is 26, his daughter, Sophia, 22. He also left five brothers, Miguel, Patrick, Rory, Grover, and Rossi, and numerous nephews. And by the way, his daughter, Sophia, 22 years old, sadly graduated this spring from Monmouth University. I shouldn't say sadly, but she graduated this spring from Monmouth University, but sadly without her dad by her side. We mentioned last week a young lady moving into college without her dad. This is a young lady graduating from college without her dad. Like so many, Jose came to New Jersey in search of his American dream, and we hope he found it. We know he did in his tremendous family. May God bless and watch over him. And finally, for this Wednesday, we remember Toms River's Jeanette Raby. COVID took Jeanette on February 26th at the age of just 57 years old. By the way, each of the losses of life, Judy and Ed, today are in their 50s. I think it's probably by coincidence that they're all being spoken about today, but we have to remind people this is far and away no longer a virus and pandemic of elderly. These are folks who are in the prime of their lives. And again, Jeanette was 57. She had worked as a radiation protection supervisor at the Oyster Creek Power Generation Facility in Forked River since 2008, a span of years that went from the facility's life as a power plant all the way through its decommissioning in 2018 and into its safe dismantling. She was one of the folks making sure the workers and community remained safe throughout. And given that she was from Toms River, Jeanette had a special love for the beach and enjoyed traveling, and you could see her standing on the shore. She left behind her husband, Michael, with whom I had the great honor of speaking on Monday. He's now in North Carolina. And by the way, they would have celebrated 29 years of marriage. To leave her sons, Ezra and Cortland, along with Cortland's wife, Ashley, and a stepson, Daniel. She also leaves her parents. Please keep them in your prayers, Jeanette and Raymond, her sisters, Cynthia and Ruth, brothers, Tim and Ray, and numerous other family and friends. We thank Jeanette for her focus on keeping the families and communities of Ocean County safe, and may God bless and watch over her memory and the family she leaves behind. This is, by the way, I say to my colleagues, we counted it up, the 217th time that we have been together for a briefing. And in all but a handful, we have remembered some of those we've lost to this pandemic. Folks, please go get vaccinated to protect yourself and your family. I want to switch gears a couple more times briefly. I want to turn our focus to Tarina Nicole Hill, that woman on the left, a veteran of New York's fashion industry and the founder of the Fashion Design Center of South Jersey, a makerspace that seeks to empower tomorrow's fashion leaders. Through the Fashion Design Center, Tarina has provided emerging designers with courses, resources, opportunities, and mentorship. To keep the dream and vision of the Fashion Design Center alive, Tarina partnered with the New Jersey Economic Development Authority, which came through with not one, not two, but three grants that has allowed her to keep providing needed services and resources. And she was also able to launch a paid internship program with a local high school to reach even deeper into her community. I had the great honor of speaking with Tarina on Monday. We had a great chat. New Jersey's always been ahead of the curve in so many things, and through her leadership, the Fashion Design Center will keep us ahead. Check them out. Fashion Design Center, SJ, as in South Jersey, .com. Before we leave, a quick sports report. First, we would be remiss if we did not acknowledge the New Jersey athletes representing our nation at the Paralympic Games in Tokyo, which will wrap up this Sunday. They are Gianfranco Iannotta of Garfield in track and field, Pennington's John Tangay in rowing, and by the way, John is bringing a silver medal home to Mercer County, gold ball team member and six-time Paralympian Lisa Chikowski from Boonton, Ray Henniger of Deptford, who won a silver medal with the wheelchair rugby team, and by the way, Ray served our nation with the United States Marine Corps in Iraq, where he was injured by an improvised explosive device, otherwise known as IED. A recreational therapist recommended he find a sport to aid in his recovery, and now he's a Paralympic silver medalist. Jersey City's Raymond Martin, who is also bringing home two silver medals in the 400 and 1500 meters at the track and field. And last but not least, Robert Griswold of Freehold in Monmouth County, my county, who's bringing home a gold medal in the 100-meter backstroke. We are so proud of them and every athlete who's been wearing the red, white, and blue in competition over the past week, just as we were of their fellow Olympians a few weeks ago. Congratulations to all, and we can't wait to welcome them home. And finally, staying with sports, this is New Jersey Football Week, and there you can see the proclamation that says so. As teams across the state are preparing for the start of their seasons, I will be in attendance at sold-out SHI Stadium in Piscataway tomorrow night as the Rutgers Scarlet Knights open their season against Temple. Again, sold out, over 53,000 people, and among them, Pat Callahan and many members of the state police will be on the field for the national anthem, thanks to an invitation by Coach Greg Schiano, and that they are celebrating the 100th anniversary and birthday of the New Jersey State Police. I'll be looking for you, Pat. And over the weekend, if that weren't enough, the Rutgers New Brunswick campus will be the epicenter of high school football as SHI Stadium will host 12 games over 3 days, the so-called Rumble on the Raritan. So to them and to all of our college, high school, and youth league players and coaches, I wish you a safe, healthy, and fabulous season. And I must give special shout-outs to New Jersey Interscholastic Athletic Association Executive Director Colleen McGuire, Commissioner and Coach John Jacob of the New Jersey Football Coaches Association, and our dear friend Senator, State Senator Paul Sarlo, and Mayor Paul Sarlo for all their efforts in launching this year's season. And finally, tomorrow, I will be at Joint Base McGuire-Dix Lakehurst alongside various members of our cabinet, including the two immediately to my left and right, for a briefing on the arrivals of Afghan refugee families. We'll have more for you coming out of that visit. That is all I've got for today. I hope you all enjoy the long Labor Day weekend. Please be safe, especially if you're preparing to head back to school. Watch the rain and flash flooding from now until the wee hours of tomorrow morning, especially. We will be back with you, as I mentioned, on Monday, a week from today, right here, unless you hear otherwise, at 1 p.m. Please help me welcome the woman who needs no introduction, the Commissioner of the Department of Health, Judy Persichelli.
Thank you, Governor. Good afternoon. As the Governor mentioned, $267 million in federal grants are available to assist local educational agencies and non-public schools with implementing COVID-19 screening testing for students and staff in K through 12 schools. We all want the safest return to school for children and staff, and this funding will help schools open safely by providing access to testing resources such as test kits, diagnostic lab services, PPE, and full testing services. Districts can choose to use one of several state-designated vendors, or they can receive funding for testing programs that the districts already have in place. To qualify for the funding, chief school administrators were advised in mid-July that they must develop a testing plan in consultation with their local health department and based on the screening testing guidelines that the department issued last month. So I want to give a brief overview of the guidance for parents and school districts and staff. First, I want to emphasize that school-based testing should not be used alone, but as part of a layered prevention approach that includes masking, frequent hand washing, physical distancing, and staying home when you're sick. When schools implement testing combined with prevention strategies, they can detect new cases to prevent outbreaks, reduce the risk of further transmission, and protect students, teachers, and staff. All K through 12 schools are strongly encouraged to develop a screening testing program to identify asymptomatic infections to prevent further transmission in schools. Those who are fully vaccinated do not need to participate in routine screening testing. Currently, 55% of our children ages 12 to 17 have received at least one dose of vaccine, and 44% are fully vaccinated. So those that are fully vaccinated do not need to participate in routine screening testing. Additionally, those who tested positive for COVID, since test results may remain positive for up to 3 months, even though the individual is no longer infectious. Testing should be offered on a voluntary basis, and schools should have a procedure in place to obtain parental consent for minor students. School-based testing should never be conducted without consent from a parent or a legal guardian. Testing strategies can be broadly divided into diagnostic testing, which evaluates primarily symptomatic individuals or those who have been exposed to COVID-19, and then screening testing, in which entire groups of asymptomatic individuals are tested. The screening testing matrix in the Department of Health's guidance provides recommended testing strategies based on the region's COVID-19 activity level, or CALI score. Screening testing of teachers and staff across all levels who are not fully vaccinated should be at least once a week. Student screening may not be necessary in areas of low transmission, but in regions with moderate, high, or very high virus activity, screening testing of students who are not fully vaccinated, or random samples of 10% of students should be completed at least once a week. Students and staff who are not fully vaccinated will undergo testing based on the screening testing matrix found in the public health recommendations. Individuals who test positive should be immediately excluded from school, and school-based close contacts should be identified and excluded from school for 10 days in regions with low or moderate risk, or 14 days in regions with high or very high risk. Anyone who tests positive by rapid antigen test and is asymptomatic should be additionally referred for confirmatory testing by a PCR test within 2 days of the initial test. Asymptomatic, exposed, close contacts who are fully vaccinated do not have to quarantine, and they should just be tested in 3 to 5 days following the exposure. Additional health and safety information provided by the Department of Health and the Department of Education for school reopenings can be found in the Road Forward. Moving on to my daily report, as the governor shared, our hospitals reported 1,065 hospitalizations of COVID-19 positive patients and persons under investigation, with 211 individuals in ICU and 51% of those individuals are on ventilators. Fortunately, there are no new cases of multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children. At the state veterans' homes, there are no new cases among residents of the homes, and at the psychiatric hospitals, no new cases among the patients. The positivity statewide on August 28th is 6.98%. The northern part of the state is 5.60%, central 8.18%, southern part of the state 8.84%. So that concludes my daily report. Please continue to stay safe. Let's get vaccinated to protect ourselves, our family, our friends, and most importantly, our children. Thank you.
Judy, before we go to Pat, I asked you earlier sort of an open-ended question. Would love to ask it in this forum. How are you feeling in about this right now? Lots of moving parts, right? So you've got, on the one hand, I guess this is largely in the good news category, where Delta has raged around the world. It looks like it loses steam after a couple of months, and it comes down, and in some cases stays down, in other cases it bumps up, but that may well have to do with whether or not that country was opening up at that point. On the other hand, you mentioned that there's, you know, yet another mutation here, another variant of concern. Positivity rate remains high, uncomfortably so, and especially on the weekends. Rate of transmission above one, but coming down pretty steadily. How do you? That's on all sides of this, and maybe Ed may want to weigh in as well. How are you feeling about things right now?
Well, I'll start with the vaccination rate. We all remember last year when we did not have vaccines and we didn't have testing in the beginning either. So I think with our rate of testing and the number of individuals we have vaccinated, if there is a lid to be put on this virus, we put the lid on as much as possible. We see some leveling off of cases and hospitalizations, although over the last 2 weeks it's about 22% increase in hospitalizations, so we're watching that carefully.
So the rate of the curve has started to slow, even though it's still going.
It seems to be moderating a bit. When we compare ourselves to other states, we're in much better shape. Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey are all clustered at the lower end of the increase in cases. On the other hand, the big unknown are variants. There's a variant of interest called Mu that we're watching carefully, and Lambda, which followed Delta in a lot of our other states. We're watching that carefully. But internationally, we see the Delta variant rise and fall within a 10 and 12-week period. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're hoping we'll see the downswing of Delta. But I'd love to hear what Ed has to say.
Yeah, and Ed, I'd throw on to that. Judy added vaccination and testing, and we're among the leaders on that, and that's a good thing, and folks have done the right thing overwhelmingly. Mm-hmm. Add into the fact, as the weather cools, we're going to be going inside, and that we all know that the lethality of this thing goes up when we're inside. Ed, any thoughts?
We're in a whole lot better situation than we were last year. As you mentioned, the vaccines, the natural immunity, the somewhat better therapeutics, the better understanding about how the virus transmits, all those sorts of things are working in our favor. So we're certainly a whole lot better than we were a year ago. But also, unfortunately, we're in a whole lot worse situation than a lot of people think we are in, meaning that when I look around the state, I almost see two different states. I see many people out there acting as if COVID has been completely defeated and completely gone away. And it's partly those activities which are keeping the virus around that is making it harder for us. So yes, we're in pretty good shape, much better shape than going into the last school year. As both people have mentioned, you know, we are seeing flattening out. We are seeing decreases. I think that if we were not going into the beginning of a school year right now, both for the K-12 and also the college students, that we probably would see us dropping off in the next several weeks with people going back to school. It would not surprise me, certainly, if towards the middle of the end of this month we began to see an increase again.
And to your very fair point about caution, let's remember we just announced a short while ago or showed on the screen that 10 people died in our hospitals in the past 24 hours from COVID. And per the people we memorialized, again, they were not in the past 24 hours. They were some time ago. They were all in their 50s. And in speaking with their families, their loved ones, I can't say in every case, but they were not in that sort of most susceptible category. So thank you both for riffing a little bit on that. Pat, obviously weather. And again, to repeat, again, the Office of Emergency Management reports up directly to Pat. So this is why, in addition to public safety and law enforcement and community engagement and a few other balls that you have in the air, weather, natural disasters, et cetera, are on your card. Would love to get an update on our team in Alabama. I know they're coming back. How are they doing? When are they getting here? I worry a lot right now about really soggy grounds to begin with somewhere 2 to 6 inches of rain, depending on where you are, coming in on top of it, which is why, we mentioned earlier the winds and whether or not, because if you've got a soggy ground, the tree doesn't have the foundation it needs, more likely to hit over into power lines or houses, and for all the above. Welcome, and give us what you got.
Thank you, Governor. This morning, to the governor's point about the weather, we did host a call with our county OEM coordinators and all of our state emergency management partners. Primary ones being Board of Public Utilities and DOT, amongst others. There is some concern from National Weather Service about the potential for severe thunderstorms that may spin into tornadoes in the southern part of the state. But the water probably is going to be our greatest concern. They even mentioned could it be possibly the worst they've seen in more than a decade. If you can remember right out of this building in 05, what Route 29 looked like in the city of Trenton. I'll just quickly go through where we're expecting major flooding. The Saddle River in Lodi, Passaic River in both Little Falls and Pine Brook, the Raritan River at Manville, and the North Branch Raritan River near Raritan. The Delaware also is expecting some moderate flooding, and from Phillipsburg all the way down to Lambertville and those towns, you know, Regalsville, Frenchtown, Stockton, those in between, we're expecting some moderate flooding. So certainly working with National Weather Service and the River Forecast Center, who keep updating those river gauge models as we go. And as far as preparation, we activated the State Emergency Operations Center today at noon. That is staffed to monitor this throughout. I've been on with both President Fiordaliso and in contact with Commissioner Gutierrez Scicchetti on DOT, from clearing drainage areas, making sure that their tree service vendors are lined up, making sure that their pump stations, generators are working, and they're even going to extend their emergency service patrols to make sure that they're out there, because they can help us not only with stranded motorists but blocking ramps and roadways that are not able to be driven through. Our team, NJ Task 4-1, is on their way back from Alabama. They went down. They never got deployed into New Orleans. We are bringing them back. We do have two urban search and rescue teams ready for either flooding and or tornadoes, any structural collapses. There's two teams are ready to roll, and the NJ Task Force team of 45 should be back by tomorrow afternoon, Governor. So A lot going on, a lot of balls in the air, as you said, and the wind, to your point, those gusts with the grounds just saturated, and especially up in the northeast, the water just doesn't have anywhere to go, especially in those urban areas.
Yeah, you get into a Newark in a fast rainstorm, and you could see it on streets. Hoboken is famous for this, which is why we got to continue in our infrastructure, and we just got to stay out ahead of this. I've focused mostly on flooding, but it does need to be underscored that there is a potential for severe thunderstorms and tornado warning, right?
Yes. So we're, again, like as always, our partners are from BPU, DOT, DEP, health, with just making sure that we don't miss anything there, human services with mass care if we need to open up centers. So it is that team effort that we've witnessed for the last 2 years for sure, not only with COVID, but with everything else that comes our way. And it's a phenomenal group to be a part of.
Amen to that. And it's a good time to reiterate these things are happening with more frequency and more intensity. There's just no question about that. So we just have to, it's incumbent on all of us to do everything we can to stay out ahead of this. And the whole of government approach is exactly what the doctor ordered in terms of the here and now. So thank you for all of the above. We'll start over here. Brendan's got the mic. Again, we're going to be, because of Labor Day on Monday, we won't be with you, but we'll be with you again a week from today, unless you hear otherwise from Dan or our team at 1 p.m. Right here, right now. Mike, is that you?
Yep. Yes, good afternoon, Governor. Thank
you. Nice to see you.
Likewise. The $267 million, is that, have you all calculated, is that the cost of the testing program, or is that just the money that's available from federal funds? And if it does cost more, will school districts and local governments be expected to come up with the cost, or can they tap federal funds either from the CARES Act or ARP for that money? And a second question, Governor, unrelated to the pandemic. It's been reported that at least or up to 100 Americans are still in Afghanistan that were left behind. Do you know, has your office been contacted at all, whether any of those that are still there are from New Jersey? And if so, what details can you share? Thank you.
Thank you. Michael and Paramel or Dan will follow up with you if I misspeak or there's more color. The 267 is what's available, not necessarily the cost. In fact, I mentioned in my remarks, there is a potential that it is going to cost more. And unless you hear otherwise from my colleagues or me, we will find federal money, either money that was directed toward schools or toward the state at the state level, to make up the balance if it goes over. I think you guys would agree with that. It's a good question on your second one. I do not know the answer to that as I sit here. We took a lot of incomings beginning, I'm going to say, around the 13th of August. Clearly, it intensified on the 15th when Kabul went over to the bad guys, and we took a lot of incomings on people asking for help, particularly in my case, knowing that we had a foreign service background. And to the best of my knowledge, the people that we were contacted on got out. But I do not know the specific answer. I'm not sure it's knowable in terms of whether or not there are Jerseyans still in that, still in Afghanistan. You've got, as I understand it at least, a significant amount of dual nationality individuals. And in some cases, they chose to stay. In other cases, they initially chose to stay and then saw what was happening and reversed course. So if we get any more information on that, I promise you we will let you know. It's a very good question. I'm not sure, frankly, I'm not sure what system would have that information other than anecdotal. And if I hear anything anecdotally, I'll make sure we get to you. Thank you. Matt, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Governor. Just as we edge closer to September 20th, any update on which mega sites will reopen? And I don't know if you touched on this on Monday, but if you don't have an update today, do you have a timeline of when you'll announce that stuff? How serious are you willing to consider remote learning if things do get worse? Were any of today's 20 confirmed deaths breakthrough cases? And lastly, is the administration concerned at all that giving districts too much to juggle in terms of the rules that they have to follow with testing, The commissioner just laid them all out. They seem pretty lengthy. Is there any concern that that just might be too much for them to juggle? Thanks.
I'm going to go out of order, Matt, if you permit me. Breakthrough among the 10 that either passed yesterday or the 20 we confirmed. Ed, do you happen to know?
I know that I don't know is a short answer. The problem is it takes a while once we get a death gets reported to us until the investigation is done that we know that they've been vaccinated. So when that death is first reported, we often do not know if they were vaccinated. So no, I couldn't tell you for sure if any of these were vaccine breakthroughs or not.
Again, to repeat the sort of broad statement, and we've said this many times, thank God the vaccinations are exceedingly effective, as Judy has pointed out many times, as has Ed, against hospitalization, severe illness, or death. But we'll come back to give you more color on that. Which mega sites and when will we announce the plan? I think we're probably going to be either sometime, my guess is either a week from day or today or a week from Monday, unless someone suggests otherwise. So I'd be pointing, Matt, to either the 9th or the 14th when we'll have the full plan. Remote learning. If we need to, it would be, I think, at a district level. I do not envision doing what we did in March of 2020 and shutting the whole state down. That's just not in the cards. You never say never with this virus. As I've said many times, it's very humbling trying to stay out ahead of this thing, but I don't anticipate that to happen. And it would have to be a dramatic outbreak of some sort at the local level, and it would be done, I would bet, overwhelmingly on the district basis, unless Judy or Ed see otherwise. And I'm, listen, the districts have been fantastic partners, and I give a shout out to the superintendents and their teams, principals, boards of education, educators, support staff, moms, dads, kids. Everyone's been extraordinary for now a year and a half. So I would say that we've given them a lot to handle. When I say we, the virus has given all of us a lot to handle, and I think overwhelmingly they've done an exceptional job. So I think, is it possible in the early days there's, you know, working the kinks out and bumps in the road? I'm sure there will be, and that not every district will have the same uniform experience. But they have shown time and again an incredible ability to adapt and to do the job, and I fully expect that'll be the case here as well. Thank you for that. Alex, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Governor. For Dr. Livschitz, you just mentioned people that are participating in activities that are keeping the virus around. Can you elaborate? Because if it's shopping without a mask, there's no indoor mask mandate. If it's indoor dining is allowed. What particular thing are people doing that's keeping this virus around? Commissioner, can you elaborate a little bit on the decrease in cases that you were talking about? Is this Delta variant doing what the governor said it did in India and potentially suddenly hitting a wall and falling down in a good way with decreasing cases? Are we kind of seeing the end of this peak? Governor, you mentioned people left behind in Afghanistan. I can tell you for a fact that at least 3 New Jersey residents are stranded in Afghanistan because I've been talking to their son, a mother, a father, and a 12-year-old girl.
Can you get us their information?
Sure. Just wanted to know what you're going to be doing in that particular instance. And Congressman Kim yesterday indicated to us that there might be more New Jersey residents that he's been dealing with.
I missed the first part of your comment. Are they expressing they want to leave?
Hell yes.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I mean, I guess who wouldn't, but I understood. Okay. I want to follow up. Can we get Dan to follow up and get the coordinates?
And a separate political question. Vince Palestina has been selected to fill the seat of the resigned Senator Chris Brown. Your Secretary of State, Tahisha Way, certified his selection, but Senate President Sweeney is not going to put together a quorum to swear the senator in. Is Vince Palestina a senator? Did Tahisha Way err in certifying him? And do you believe he should be able to serve the residents who he represents now? And finally, just a very broad question. We've talked about this before. When you used to talk about masks and other measures to combat the virus, you used to say the phrase, this is not forever and for always.
Yep.
You haven't used that phrase lately. Has there been a change? When do you see the pandemic as ending, especially if it's something that we're going to have boosters for that may be around for a while. Is this ever going to end? And what's your personal metric for ending the pandemic? Does it have to be zero hospitalizations, deaths, or cases? And if so, we could be here for a long time.
Got it. All good questions. Ed, it seems to me the behavior that is the most concerning is packed in inside with people who are not masked and whose vaccination status is not knowable. Is that a fair?
No, absolutely.
I don't think it's sitting at a table at dinner. I don't see it that. I also don't know that. We were in a restaurant last night. We wore the mask to the table, have dinner with two unvaccinated people. We took it off. When we left the table, we put it back on again. But, Ed, please.
No, that's correct. And you're absolutely right when you talk about the mask mandate being relaxed or back in May. But the second part of that, which a lot of people didn't hear, is that while the mandate, meaning the requirement for people to wear masks indoors, was removed, the recommendation that those who are unvaccinated wear masks regularly indoors has never gone away, meaning the recommendation has consistently been there that those who are unvaccinated indoors wear masks, and more recently with the spread of the Delta variant, that has been somewhat strengthened to say that even those who have been vaccinated who are going to be, as the governor said, in close indoor quarters with people whose vaccination status that you don't know should wear masks as well. So certainly, you know, as I go to places, whether it be stores or restaurants or walk through a bar or other places as well and look around, you know, typically what I'm seeing now compared to what I was seeing 3-6 months ago is an awful lot of people who aren't taking those extra precautions, including often a lot of people that, you know, can't be masked based upon their general size and age, how they look, and that people overall are being more relaxed when they do things. And yes, the vaccines have helped, and yes, we are in a better situation, and all those things are important, but that doesn't mean that we can go back and forget kind of basic infection control, forgetting basically how the virus works, that the virus has not gone away, and just completely relaxing our standards.
Thank you, Ed. Judy, I'm not sure you're comfortable yet saying that you're seeing a decrease. The rate of increase has come down, but we're still going up. But I guess the very good question is whether or not, I guess there's no way of knowing, are we going to live through what India lived through where it falls off the table? We hope it does, that's for sure.
And we look at cases per 100,000 on a 7-day rolling average, and we've seen a slight flattening of the trajectory going up, and we're hoping that means that the Delta variant is coming through our state and will leave us. It won't happen overnight. Also, the CDC does a forecast, so you can go on their site. They do a forecast. I guess it's four research entities. It's a pretty wide variation, but it shows a slight flattening as well. We can hope that that's what we're going to see.
Yeah, please, please, please. And by the way, we you and I were doing some looking at modeling, and not just across different sources, but across, you know, moderate versus high, you could drive trucks through the through the gaps here. So it really is an open-ended. On the Afghanistan question, two parts to that. One is, again, we want to get the information from you, and thank you for that. And secondly, one of the side benefits of having been an ambassador, we've got pretty deep connections into the State Department. So we've used those in the cases that have come to us since August 10th, and I would bet that that's how we'll continue to go at it. The question about the senator, is he a senator or not, is above my pay grade, so I'll defer to Chief Counsel Paramel Garg here.
When Mr. Palestina is sworn in is a matter for the legislature, and we don't have any comment on that.
Okay, thank you, Paramel. I would repeat again, I haven't said it in a while, you're absolutely right, it is not forever and always, but I think we've also said for a while, and I'd ask Judy and Ed to disagree if they see it differently. I think at the end of the day, when it sort of settles into a static state, it's going to be in our midst, like the flu is in our midst. And my gut, based on any, again, I'm not an expert here, but based on all the conversation with experts, it's going to be around. and we're going to learn to live with it, as we are doing already. Sadly, I think, Ed, you said a few months ago, a bad flu season in New Jersey takes about 1,000 lives a year in a bad season. And at that point, where we did not have the Delta variant, we were running at 2,000, but it was coming down. I'm guessing it's something like that. I think the open-ended questions are how many other variants come on top, you know, how many other variants come back on the back of the Delta variant, and how far does that extend this current phase? And I think the other open big one for me is the booster shots. Does this become an annual event like the flu shot I got the other day? Or is it every 5 years, every 10 years, no more, to be determined? I don't think anyone knows the answer to that, but that's sort of where I would be right now. Thank you. Sir, is that fair? Would you guys, you all good with that?
Good afternoon, Governor.
Good afternoon.
Question from Brenda Flanagan. A New Jersey woman was charged with selling fake COVID vax cards online, and some of her customers worked in healthcare settings. How common is this, and what are your concerns, and what is the state doing to combat it? And how is the Docket app used by the state designed to prevent this type of fraud? On another subject, with Texas's restrictive abortion ban going into effect as the U.S. Supreme Court refused to block it, are you concerned about the threat to Roe v. Wade, and will you prioritize getting the Reproductive Freedom Act passed, which could codify the right to abortion in state law? And Governor, do you support the following legislation sponsored by the Senate Majority Leader aimed at addressing sexual harassment in the workplace and in campaigns? S-3389, which requires adoption of and training on anti-discrimination by certain campaign committees. S-3077, which requires revision of state legislature's anti-harassment policy. And S-3078, which codifies state workplace anti-harassment and discrimination policy. And a question from Colleen O'Day. Will you be adding data on third doses and eventually boosters to the dashboard? If so, how soon? Thank you.
I find that you're talking a lot faster than you used to be. Squeezing more questions in. I don't think to Brent, please give Brenda my best and Colleen as well. I think on this knucklehead who's selling the fake vaccination cards, I do not think that is widespread at all. And we will come down on anybody who does that with the full force of law enforcement and prosecution to the fullest extent. It's completely unacceptable and obviously undermines public safety and undermines confidence in public safety. I'll switch to Colleen. The answer is I would say absolutely, certainly we'll be adding the data on the dashboard for both the third doses as well as the boosters. Third doses is already on there, I believe, for the immunocompromised, and we'll do for the boosters as well. I'm out of order here. Texas ban does concern me very much so. It's what we had anticipated could happen. And remember the reproductive freedoms. I don't want to get into politics, but the fact of the matter is protecting women's health here, reproductive freedom in our state is built on case law. And all of that case law is in turn built on the Supreme Court's decision on Roe v. Wade. So if the foundation of that series of case laws is impacted, impaired, taken away, the entire reality in our state falls like a house of cards, which is why we need to, as soon as possible, put this protection into statute. And I'm strongly supportive of that and want to have that happen sooner than later. I won't comment on the specifics of the bills, but the conceptual direction of all those bills are completely consistent with steps that we've taken in our current campaign. I think it's literally best in class on all the things that you talked about, harassment, discrimination, training, systems that are put in place for folks to raise their hand if they see something that is not right, as well as steps that we've taken inside of government. And again, I'm not commenting on the specific bills, which I would not, but if those statutes strengthen steps that we've already taken or expand steps in a way that makes sense, conceptually, I'd say I'm all in enthusiastically. And again, I think we're doing a lot of what those bills, I believe, envision. And if there's more in those bills that are consistent with what we're doing, sign me up. Thank you. Anything you'd add to that? Or are you good? Okay. Dustin, nice to see you. Hold on one sec.
Good afternoon.
I haven't seen, by the way, Dave usually sits in the seat. I haven't seen Dave. Is he? I assume he's okay. Hopefully taking a little time off.
Oh, maybe I should start with good afternoon, Governor.
You're in the Dave Mathau Memorial seat here.
Could you clarify on this $267 million for school testing? Is that new money? And if so, can you specify where exactly that's coming from? Has that money been allocated, or do the districts still need to apply? And I believe you've already said what you don't plan to use American Rescue Plan funds for, such as replenishing unemployment fund or extending unemployment benefits, but I don't think you've specified what you plan to use that money for. When will you detail your plans for those funds? Has New Jersey spent any of that money? And do you have any thoughts on the Chattarelli campaign using Katie Brennan in election ads against you? And do you have any response to the list of issues his campaign is highlighting to show voters your, quote, abysmal record with women? Thank you.
On the 267, is that ARP or CARES? And if not, if we don't know the answer to this right now, we'll come back to you.
We expect all of that money to be reimbursable through federal funds, whether it's going to the state, whether it's going to counties or school districts directly. But we can get you more details.
We'll get you more detail on that, Dustin. And by the way, you asked a good question because you said apply for it or not. And the fact of the matter is there's money. There's a bunch of different roads you can go down here, essentially, right? So you've got also districts, which I think you mentioned in your remarks, and I believe I did, that have set up their own shop, and it's consistent with your required minimum standards, and they need reimbursement as opposed to they need us to do the actual process. Anything you want to add to that? Or
yeah, the money, the actual funds, the 267, are coming through CDC, through their ELC funds. And the allocation has, they've not been allocated yet, but it's ready to go as soon as the school districts identify their testing plans and choose whether they'll do it on their own or through the vendors that we've selected.
We'll come back to you on any other color on that if you guys can help me out. Thank you, Judy, on that. On the ARP money at the state level, again, Paramel or Dan will correct me if I'm wrong, we got plus or minus $6.2 billion, and I would say somewhere between two and two and a half has been spoken for, and there is about four-ish billion dollars. I've had very good conversations with the Senate President and the Speaker. We want to do this responsibly. We want to do this in a sort of responsible and lasting manner. We want to do it with the legislature. And we have until the end of 2023 to deploy this money. So we have got, I think we've developed a good process with the legislature in terms of stuff that we have to do now that comes up. For instance, we've got one that we expect that will come up that we need money to administer a program that we'll be able to do that for a while with the monies we have. But at a certain point, we'll need something before, sooner than later, and there's a process set up for that, which is a good one with the legislature, and we've had good conversations around that. So more to come on that. And again, it's, Dustin, for lack of a better range, it's plus or minus $4 billion, and again, we want to spend it and spend it right. I'd rather not get into any of the politics here. This is really not, you know, I would just say Katie's experience is one that impacted all of us deeply. It's led to a lot of the changes and steps we've taken on behalf of survivors, whether it's in official government, whether it's in general society in New Jersey, or to the first one of those bills inside of campaigns. And those are lessons that have been, you know, that will stay with us, steps that have been taken, laws that have been passed and signed, and if there's more we can and should do, we will do that. We want to be, as I've said, not for a while, but we want to be, if an awful thing befalls you as a survivor, as it did Katie or others out there, that we want New Jersey to be the role model American state of being there for you. So, with that, grab a quick swig here. And mask up, Judy and Ed, thank you, as always. Pat, likewise. And again, Judy and Pat and I will spend a good chunk of our day tomorrow at the Joint Base. And we'll probably, my guess is at latest next Wednesday, but my guess is before then, we'll have some means of reporting out information that folks are curious about. We have a lot of organizations and a lot of individuals in this state who have raised their hand to help in any way possible, whether it's in the healthcare arena, whether it's in, on with NJEA this morning, what can educators do? On with a group of community leaders and faith leaders in the Jewish community, along with Senator Weinberg, Senator Singer earlier today, folks raising their hand, we want to help. It's great Jersey spirit, not surprising. And so we'll have a better, the feds have been really driving this, we've been their partner, we're going to learn a lot more about what those needs may be. In the meantime, please stay safe in this weather, particularly watch out for flash flooding, the potential for severe thunderstorms, and God forbid, I hope not, tornadoes, and that's a today reality. That'll go into, the rain at least will go into the early hours of tomorrow. Wish you a great, I think the weather's going to be decent, a great Labor Day weekend. Please be careful. Celebrate our brothers and sisters in labor and the great heritage of labor, but do it responsibly. To everybody who's going back to school, we wish them an incredible school year. And please, folks, continue to do the right thing, including please get vaccinated. God bless.